Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar and Music Licensing Profits. We're with Sei Nakauchi Pelletier. And if you're saying, guy sounds like he's talking Japanese and French, I am. My guest today is from Montreal, and he's a recording artist, and he is Japanese and French. And I met Sei, like, what, 2 or 3 months ago, maybe, on this show? 4 months ago, maybe?
2 or 3 months. Oh, maybe more than that. Maybe.
Yeah.
Say even was almost it, a year ago.
No, was it that long?
It was just after we released Hagata, you know, with Take It,
yes.
Take It. And so I believe it must have been July. It must have been summer.
God. Know? Oh my God. So like last year, I met Sei as a guest on the show on Everyone Loves Guitar. We'll talk about his band, but today he's here to talk about it. He was kind enough to come back to share he's a very successful music licensing expert, and he scored lots of movies. So let me get into it. Montreal-based composer, recording artist, known for his work, also known for his work as a film and television composer. He's been doing that for 15 years. I would have really encouraged you to, even though this isn't about Teke Teke, check out his band Teke Teke. It's T-E-K-E-T-E-K-E. Awesome. I mean, like, just such cool, like, Japanese surf, jazz, acid jazz, psychedelic. And if you are into licensing, this guy is one of the greatest arrangers that I've spoken to. He's just like, dude, you have like a 7-piece band and you just distill it down into like one smooth, coordinated working plan. That's not easy, man. It's great.
Thank you.
He's also collaborated with several artists as a producer, arranger, and as a touring musician. Sei is trilingual, and he's scored over 24 movies in Japanese, French, and English. Again, I met him several months ago, close to a year ago, and we had a great conversation. I would encourage you to check that out on the Everyone Loves Guitar YouTube channel. And like I said, I want to have him back to specifically discuss his experience in music licensing for both the Everyone Loves Guitar audience and, of course, for the Music Licensing Profits audience. So, dude, thank you so much. I appreciate your time again.
Thank you so much, Craig. This is going to be fun. I don't get to talk about, you know, that part of the music, the scoring and all that stuff. So, you know, it's something that I do a lot on my own. So it'll be interesting to share some thoughts on that for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. Now let's get into this. Your dad was a huge music fan of British, American, and Japanese music, as well as a cinematographer, a photographer, director of photography, cameraman. And he worked in film and television in Japan during the 70s. And I know from our earlier conversation, his musical influence on you was huge. What I did not know is you also pursued animation at one point, but then while you were in college, you went to Japan on your own on a solo trip. And while you were there, something magical happened that made you want to start on a new musical project influenced by film. So I'd love to know, man, what happened to you? Like, what was the turning event that happened to you in Japan? And what was the new musical project you started once you got back home?
Well, you know, just so people know, I was born in Japan, but I grew up in Quebec, in Canada. And I went back when I was a kid, but I went back on my own for the first time in my early 20s. And I don't know, I guess I was just looking, you know, for me in my early 20s,
who does?
I don't know.
Shame on you.
Yeah, in my early 20s, I was still like, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I had been playing music and bands and touring and like recording and stuff even, but you know, early 20s, you get the pressure from the people around you and stuff. And like, so you start thinking again, like, you know, is music really serious and everything? And so I think I took a trip to Japan to look for something. Of course, I wanted to, you know, perhaps reconnect with maybe a part of me that, you know, the part of me that was from Japan, from my mother's side, and so visited some family there. But I, you know, when I think of that trip, I was really kind of clueless and just going there and, you know, to see what would happen.
See, I think that's so cool. When I read that, I was like, wow, what, like, you know, it was kind of courageous too, to do that on your own. Well, I just thought it was so cool.
I mean, I had people, I had friends, I had family. I wasn't all alone there, but somehow it felt very kind of lonely there, just because, you know, particularly in Tokyo, it's very intense, you know, and yeah, it's easy to feel lonely. And you'll see a lot of like movies and stuff where people are like Japan, Tokyo, and they're like, oh, it's tough and everything. I don't know. I think in a way I was perhaps too young to accomplish what maybe I wanted to accomplish there. But at the same time, you know, it triggered all sorts of emotions in me, and it made me want to do something else. It made me want to come back.
You know? So it gave you a different perspective on here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. And well, I should probably mention that when I went, of course, I brought a whole bunch of little gadgets like cameras and I would record audio and stuff like that. So that's how, you know, it in my head, I started experimenting with like ideas of like audio and images and recordings of all sorts. It wasn't really clear what I was doing, but when I got back here, I took all that and it inspired me to start this project that was more influenced by images and footage and videos. And basically, it's almost like I wanted to score my own little film or whatever. And the whole thing was very experimental. So this was the birth of the ideas that would later become my instrumental rock project called the Power Up First that I started in like 2005.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me ask this. Have you taken subsequent trips alone like that?
To Japan?
To anywhere?
Anywhere. I mean, have I? Probably, yes. But not as far, you know?
Yeah.
Not as far as Japan, but mostly, I mean, not so much. It's true.
Tell you why I asked. I had a guy on the show recently named Steve Belk, a guy from Canada, actually, from Manitoba, I think. And he was telling me the story that he was at a kind of a low point, and I think probably every musician and artist goes through this, where things just weren't working. He was trying to write and he was like, nothing would come out. And he's a very prolific guy, like yourself, right? So he said, he had a friend of his who's kind of like a hippie. And she said to him, she goes, hey, I have this cabin up in the middle of nowhere. Just go up there for a few days. And he said, okay, I don't know what's going to happen. But, and he said that after 2 or 3 days, and he was married with kids and he just, you know, and this is before cell phones. So he's like, said goodbye to his wife and like she had, like literally they'd have no contact for 3 or 4 days.
Right.
And he said after a few days, little things he started to notice, like the bugs crawling in the grass and certain flowers. And he said all of a sudden it was like an explosion and he started writing like crazy. And I asked him, I said, have you taken... And he said it was, you know, creatively, it really was one of the best things he's ever done. And I asked him if he'd done subsequent trips like that. And he goes, yeah, I do them on a regular basis now. Because of course, I can call my wife now. We got cell phones. But, and I've never done that because I've had a couple of periods in my life where I've been down about stuff. And my wife is like, hey, do you want to just like go visit a friend or, you know, do something? And I never did. I felt guilty. But he said to me, he goes, do it before you're at a low point. He said, just go away and do it. Yeah, I mean, because like he had the same thing that happened on your trip. This kind of changed your life.
Yeah, I would say so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But you know what? After that, I didn't feel so much. I didn't feel inclined to take any more of those trips so much. I think it's because I found in music a way to travel in my head.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, sure.
Because I'm not so much the type to like isolate myself and feel the need to go in the woods all by myself to,
I'm the same.
To get inspired. I
it's kind of creepy, actually, the thought of that for me.
Yeah. For me, it's just, I don't know, inspiration just, it'll just pop out like that. It'll just show up. And so, yeah, I don't think I need it. And also, I took that trip not really knowing anything. It wasn't like for music or, you know, it was just because I could do it at the time. I didn't have anything sure. else to do, anything better to do. But it did trigger that. It did kind of confirm to me too that like it was one more thing again that took me back to music. I feel like there's a lot of times like that in my life where I would try a different thing or like, you know, try something different from music, and it would always kind of like drag me back. And then that's when I kind of started to shut down all the voices from people around me saying whatever about that and just follow my instinct and work on the music stuff.
Just one more question about that.
Yeah.
When you said that you shut down the voices and started following your instinct.
Yeah.
Was there some like, what's the word I'm looking for? Courage, or was it difficult to do that?
I think it was. I mean, it's not easy just because of, you know, the templates, the, you know, how society is and how the system is. And, you know, they're trying to shut down not everybody, but like, of course, in your 20s and when you're looking for things and trying to figure shit out, it's like, you know, everybody around you, they think they're being nice and they're like, oh, well, you should be serious and do this and that. And of course, you know, at some point I was like questioning it myself too, because
right.
I got to eat at some point and, you know, but I think it was like that for a few years. But like I said, I kind of shut down those voices. I believed in what I was doing, I guess. And then I had opportunities that I took, and also choices I made at some point, you know, when I had my first kid too, that it wasn't all about me anymore. It was about, you know, getting some food on the table. So
yeah.
I had to do stuff, and it takes me back to, you know, licensing, because I've done stuff with music that, you know, I wouldn't do, like advertisement and stuff like that and pitching and, you know, in the early stages of doing this. But of course I had to take, you know, I had to take the gigs that were there, and because it wasn't just about me and being creative anymore. And
sure.
You have to sustain your life too, and a newborn baby and all that. So, yeah.
Yeah, but it sounds like you had you had a plan in your head, a master plan, and that you knew this would kind of like, somehow you knew this is part of it.
And no master plan whatsoever.
No, but you sound like your master plan as far as like, I know I'm committing to music, and I know this is not necessarily what I want to be doing, but I know this is going to get me there maybe.
Yeah, as far as like committing to like making music, yes, but I didn't know, you know, it was still, I knew it was going to take time to figure out like, oh, what is it going to be? Is it going to be like just a touring band or like making music for TV, this and that? I really, I had no idea.
Attention musicians, composers, artists, and songwriters. If you have a burning desire to get involved with the current explosion of opportunities in music licensing and take your income to the next level, then you must listen to this. A new free training video has just been released, which shows you how to make your first placement in music licensing, or if you've already made some placements, but you don't have a specific system to make more placements more consistently, you'll learn how to do this as well. This free video training is called Where the Money's Hiding in the Music Business, and you can find it online at musicreboot.com. This video shows you how to create the financial stability you've always wanted and how to take advantage of the current explosion of opportunities in music licensing due to streaming and the internet. So check it out online now at musicreboot.com.
And I was fortunate enough. I feel like life just made it happen in some ways. Like, and it's funny thinking back on this. You know, it really goes all the way back to the influence that my father, well, both my parents had on me musically. And if I think of the music, the first music I heard in my life was music from films, also with rock and roll and all that stuff, and classical music from my mom. So I think it really planted a seed, you know, at that time. That was very useful for me later. So, yeah.
Very cool, man. Thank you for sharing that. Let's talk about, you mentioned your band Power Up First. So in 2013, your band Power Up First, which when I first, I was like trying to pronounce it and I said, oh, it's Power Up, Power Up. Yeah.
Yeah. Power Up, and Power is like, I think I had a recording of a Japanese anime that said the power up. It was a character that would say that before, you know, getting powerful. And then a friend of mine made a mistake when doing artwork for us and for like the first album and added first to power up. So it just became Power Up First. It's kind of a silly name, but
that's a funny story though, man. Mm-hmm. So you guys won the equivalent of like a Best Instrumental Album Grammy Award in Quebec for your album called Missing Time. So some of the music on that record wound up getting placed in films and documentaries. How did that happen? And did that experience give you sort of like the bug to want to get more music licensed and placed? And if so, why?
Yeah, actually, it was music from previous albums, even that were used for like documentaries and TV shows and stuff. But how did it happen? I don't know. It's just like, and you know, they were used in very kind of like low key projects and, you know, nothing major. But though, it's funny because when starting this project, it was meant to be more of an experiment between audio and images and all of that. But I never thought about the fact that it could be used for films or whatever after. It's just, and so of course, obviously after when I saw the offers and this and that, and also through the label and the publishers that they would do pitches, you know, that we didn't know about. And then we would get the offers, and then that's how it started, basically. Because also, when you're a band, we were a band, like we were doing instrumental music. So not exactly the most popular kind of music. And
sure.
And then at some point, it's like, oh, okay, maybe some placements, some syncs. Yeah, maybe we can get some money out of it too.
Yeah,
have to find the money where it is. If you want to sustain the project, of course, and keep it going. So that's how it happened. And then at some point, I don't know if you're familiar with French Canadian director Jean-Marc Vallée.
I'm not sorry, man.
Actually, I think he did, and rest his soul. He passed, I think, 2 years ago, but he was a very good friend of mine. And, you know, he was directing films in Hollywood and big shows like Sharp Objects and a show, you know, with Nicole Kidman called Big Little Lies.
Yeah, that one I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing stuff.
That.
And while he put one of our songs in one of his earlier films. It's called Café de Flore, with French actress Vanessa Paradis, Johnny Depp's ex-wife.
Oh, okay.
Just to give you a little context. But yeah, Jean-Marc, I think he used to change his name whenever he was working in the U.S.
Really?
He's won like Emmy Awards and like Golden Globes and stuff like he's, yeah, it's really, really a great director and he's going to be missed, man. But he gave us our first shot with a song from our second album, out from Power First. And, he was just a big, big music lover, but he would never work with the composer. It was always just the syncs, you know.
Through a music director or?
Yeah, kind of like Scorsese or Tarantino, like very dynamic kind of editing and usage of music.
So how did you guys become good friends if he never worked directly with the artist?
Just because he was working here in Quebec and the scene is so small and like he heard of the band and he liked that one song, wanted to place it in his film. So that's how we met, yeah.
That's so cool.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. We were very lucky with that.
So once you got into composing for film and TV, you said in your bio, it said you had a lot to learn. And this is interesting to me. You said specifically, there's a lot of psychology you need to understand when working in film composing. And I would love you to elaborate on that.
I mean, because there's so much of it that's about communication and yeah, being able to listen. But it's also what's not being said. And being able to read the person. I'm talking about, you know, the director or can be the producers. Yeah. I mean, mostly these are the people I would mostly have to have conversations with, you know, and it's funny because I kind of laugh when I think of that because I'm not someone. How can I put it? Okay. So when I first started, when I think of the years when I first started scoring, you know, my communication skills weren't like they were very, very poor and it wasn't great at all. And it's something that took a while for me to, you know, get better and work on it. It's still a work in progress. It's crazy, but that's why I love opportunities like these and podcasts and interviews. I try to, you know, I cherish them. I cherish them. I want to take them as opportunities to work on my skills. So thank you for that.
Dude, your communication skills are great now. I don't know what they were like in the past, but we got along pretty damn good.
I mean, because it can be really intimidating in that business, you know? I'm sure you know, like, when you first have to sit at a table with a bunch of producers, director, they always seem to come in a group, you know? It's always like a group of people. They like
to
meet,
like,
and then they meet the artist. They always kind of use that term, like, the artist, the musician, and as if we were, like, completely different. Species, you know, it's like,
see, that is great that you just the way you said that, yeah,
yeah. And then at first, it was intimidating, and I had a problem with that. I was very nervous at meetings, and that whenever we would watch films together, and people would like comment on the film, and I'd be like, oh my god, what am I supposed to say or do, or like, and also, I mean, I don't know if it's a general thing. Maybe it's only here in Quebec, or maybe it's only on certain projects, but like, you know, it's, the musician is like I was saying, a different species, it's almost like you're not part of the project and you come in later in the process. And then everybody's like talking big things and like, oh, you should cut that scene, this, that, oh, well, you know, and, but you're invited to that session and you're just questioning, like, do they want me to say anything? Do they,
right?
You know, do they trust me?
Are you supposed to respond to any of that or offer any? Yeah.
And yeah. I would think so. I would think that anybody from outside would be welcome to give like a fresh, you know,
perspective
on
yeah.
Movie. Yeah. Thank you. Like even not a musician, just someone walking outside, you know, whatever. But then again, they really know what they're doing and it's, and, you know, to, I'm not saying it's a bad thing because I know they have so much shit to think about, you know, making a film and there's so many cooks and it's like, yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. But anyways, now I approach it very differently. And this is something that, you know, I would attribute simply to confidence and building confidence. And then, you know, at some point I was like, well, you know, what the hell? I'm here. I'm not just going to sit and not say anything and be a ghost. Like, and I'm a musician. I'm part of this. I decide that I'm part of this. And
they've decided that you're part of this.
Yeah. Also, so, and music is important. A film, a TV show, a project to me, anyways.
It's so critical.
I'm going to come in with that attitude that, you know,
good.
I'm as important, you know, as all of you. And I'm entitled to make my comments and, you know, you do whatever you want with them. But so, and it's been working great for me.
Awesome.
But I also know when not to talk, you know, it's important to, yeah, it's all that stuff. So going back to communication and
your psychology. Yeah.
This is what I was saying.
Yeah. So somebody, let's say someone's new and like just getting into music licensing, right? What would you suggest to them as far as like when they're with people that are in that situation to interject or to just shut up in the beginning and just learn? Or what would you suggest?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of just trying to gauge, like, and also it's like you have these different meetings. Some of them you don't have to be so loud, you know, you can kind of just stay in the back, you know, it's not so much for you. And then certain meetings, it's more about, you know, it's the creatives are there and it's, you should take part in that. But the best is just to have, for me, like throughout the years, I've developed some relationships with directors and now it's like you don't get to meet them so much. Everything is email and Zoom and stuff like that, but you still have to meet up at some point. And it's good to be less people and just be one-on-one with a director is always very precious. I love these meetings and it makes a big difference for everything, you know?
Yeah. It's intimidating when you have a crowd, especially when you're young. It's so funny. The most of my guests are over 40 or even over 50. Right. And number one thing, if I'll say what's the biggest change that's happened, you know, it's basically some version of I give less fucks. Right. Like I'm just more confident. I don't care. And I'm just myself. So there's some of that is just getting older and being more experienced in what you're doing and like having that. You mentioned that word confidence. I think that's a big, huge thing.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's not something I take for granted. Like I'm still learning every day. And
oh, yeah.
It's still something, you know. You can get a lot of surprises on the way too. You just have to be aware and also not be overconfident. Of course, you want to.
Definitely.
So you have to be nice, you know, you have to be kind and. Yeah.
Dude, I think that's rule number one, actually. Yeah. In any kind of interpersonal conversations, you got to be nice, man, because like, I don't care who you are or how talented you are at anything. If you're an asshole, it's just like, it's so off-putting and it's like everything goes downhill from there. I agree with you 100% on that, man. Wow. That's your first thing. Yeah. It's funny. When I was younger, I used to, when I wasn't confident, I used to try to prove myself. I used to talk extremely fast. Now, part of that is just growing up in New York City, but part of it was I read something one day and it said, people who speak fast are trying to prove themselves. And I thought about it and I said, you know what? That's me. I'm trying to prove myself. And I said, I really don't need to do that. So I need to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, I try to speak fast, but I can't do it.
I think it's good if you don't speak fast.
To you know, like there's so many like stories and like stories, I mean, like posts and stuff like that. You have to cram like so much information in like 30 seconds or like less than that, even for a story. Can't do it.
Yeah.
I just have my own pace. I have to edit after.
Yeah. That's all, man.
Cut all the dead space and stuff.
Yeah. So funny. One of the things you said appealed to you about composing in the sense of scoring, you said, when making music, I often feel, and I thought this was awesome, actually, I often feel like I'm a film director myself or a painter. I'm passionate about telling a story. In short, it's something I absolutely love to do that feels like an extension of myself, and I want to keep learning, keep collaborating, and I want to work on all sorts of different projects. I truly felt the language the directors were speaking was one that I spoke as well, one of emotions, colors, and textures, rather than keys, scales, or theory. Talk about your thoughts on that, please.
Yeah.
I thought it was beautiful, actually, the way you put that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
it's
really cool.
I didn't want it to sound pretentious or anything, but it's just going back to like how I learned music. And you know, I went to school a little bit and I did some music theory, and I was gonna go study in jazz, but then at the last minute I decided not to, because at the time I was playing with a band and touring and recording, and that was good enough for me. And so I never went back and pursued like school and music or whatever. I kept it kind of like innocent, you know, in a way. And personally, it really served me well later when making music for films and TV, because of the language that the directors would use, which was not anything that had to do with like scales and keys. And so that's what I meant by that. Yeah. So they were talking, I felt like we were talking the same language, you know, emotions, colors, and textures, you know, stuff like that. So, but of course, you know, when I go back and I do it and I play some chords and this and that, I know what they are. I know if it's, you know, minor and this and that. But I tend to go more for like my instinct and how it feels, and really kind of like by ear. And to me personally, you know, it works well, and I like that.
Yeah. I've had guests tell me that they've gotten notes back or comments from the director or music supervisor, like exactly what you said. You need to make this a little more purple.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah. Like that. And well, the funny thing is when you get into things like, oh, can you make this, you know, of course, sometimes it'll happen that they're going to be like, oh, this sounds too happy for me, but it doesn't to you, you know. It's like, if there are actually minor chords, and it's like, oh, I thought it was more like melancholic and nostalgic and this and that. But anyways, you get some of that too.
So what do you do in a situation like that? When they say it sounds too happy, and you're like, God, it's the whole thing's in minor keys, minor chords. What do you, like, how do you, like, where do you go for inspiration to make that change?
Yeah. Well, it depends. If I have to, if they're in front of me, I can just show them quickly, like, you know, more like the theory of it, and just say, does it still sound happy to you? Or, and then if they still feel like it's like that, then you have to just go back and try to find those little things that would make them hear it that way. That's one thing in scoring too, that I, you know, you have to forget about your ego, you know, just you're kind of at service. You're collaborating. I like to see it as a collaboration, but
sure.
If the director says it sounds happy, then you try to hear it. You try to, you know, and then a lot of times they're kind of right. Like, and anyways, in my personal experiences, like, I would go back and say, ah, okay. Yeah. Maybe I can see it. But anyways, yeah, it's also, it depends on the director too, and your relationship with that person. Yeah. But anyways, to kind of come back to the question and the language. Yeah, I think for me, music was always, the music I'm interested in is when it's artistic. And to me, it kind of always tells a story. And even with Teke Teke, we approach albums like, you know, it's almost like a cliche to say that, but almost like a movie. And Maya, our singer, is, you know, she's like a different character in different songs and telling different stories, different perspectives. And so I still like that formula, you know, of telling a long story. Like an album is like a feature film and
sure,
a documentary or whatever. So I kind of always, yeah, I've always seen music like that. And cinema was always, for me, I always heard the music. It was, for me, it was always such a big part of films.
Is it different for you when you're watching a film in a different language? Will you hear things differently? Like if it's a Japanese film or a film in English or French?
Wow. Never really thought of that.
Well, I thought of it because I only speak one language. So if I'm sitting there and I'd be like sort of paralyzed, like I wouldn't know what to think, but you have all these skills, you have the skill sets to understand all this. So I'm wondering, you know, because each language has a culture behind it and there's different rules or different behaviors in each culture.
Yeah, for sure. But I'd say that at the end of the day, like a film, like a well-crafted film is like, it's, again, it's telling a story. And you might even kind of forget, you know, the culture behind it. I don't know. It's like you're more focused on the emotions again and the story that it's telling and everything. But of course, in the details, you can catch, you know, in a French movie, certain things in the script and the things that actors will say, you'll catch, you know, some extra details that maybe, you know, you wouldn't if you don't understand French, and you get some, yeah, you get some key details or like interesting nuances for sure. You sometimes it gets lost in the translation for sure.
What percentage of the time, like when you come back, someone comes back to you and says something like, hey, this sounds a little too happy for me. What percentage of the time do you actually have the picture to go back then and maybe look at the picture?
Do you mean like the actual images and?
Yeah. The part of the story where the music is being placed.
Oh yeah. I would say like most of the time, if not all the time.
Okay.
For like specific situations that I can think of
in
my experiences, yeah.
Does that help?
Be just the music. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say so, because sometimes the director might see something in the scene that I don't.
Gotcha.
And I'm like, all of a sudden, oh, okay. Let's see. Because, I mean, we spend a lot of time watching, but we have to make the music, and sometimes with the deadlines and everything, even, you know, we get the scripts, but like, you don't always read them entirely.
Well, or like, it's different because reading words and seeing you can't read emotions as good as you can feel them when you're watching.
Yeah, that also. Yeah. It's good. It's good to watch the, you know, the picture with the director, and that's why it's always nice to, if the composer is included in the process as early as possible, as soon as possible, that's always good. But it really isn't always the case.
Yeah. We in our music licensing profits program, we have, it shows you a bunch of different ways, 10 different ways of getting music licensing gigs. As you were coming up in the business, what was one of the things you did to get gigs that you found most helpful or that had the biggest impact for you at that particular point in time? Because I remember you said earlier something about having to make pitches, and you know, that stuff's always intimidating. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was in the very early stages of me doing that kind of stuff and trying to see where music can go and like what I can do besides just playing with bands and stuff. And everything I'm saying today, by the way, is really like, it's my own experience, you know,
sure,
I speak from. So yeah, I was fortunate enough to meet a person that would become kind of my agent for all things scoring, TV and film work. So he helped me a lot with the first few gigs I got, scoring documentaries and stuff like that, because he knew the people in the industry and had a good network and recording studio as well. And then after that, I guess it was just a word of mouth, you know, but I can think of a few key people that I'm very thankful for, who just kind of like told people in the business and directors and producers that I was making instrumental music, and the band, Power First, really helped. Because yeah, anything you do, with the music, if it's band stuff, any project, it helps, because then, you know, people hear it and they can, maybe it'll trigger some idea like, oh, this could work fine for this project and this and that. So for me recently, with Teke Teke, the two albums, it sure had some effects on that too. And, you know, right now we're working on kind of a top secret project, but it is more like a scoring type of stuff.
That's cool.
So, yeah. But yeah, so for me, it was really word of mouth and like getting my projects heard. But again, we're talking like very kind of like micro industry that it is here in Quebec. And that's where I started, I guess. And it was 15 years ago. So, you know, yes, internet, this and that, but it wasn't. I feel like now it's really like more connected, and you can work on projects from anywhere. And
yeah.
And I've had like some work on a co-production between Europe and Quebec and Japan, or like, you know, it's, yeah. You got people here scoring stuff on Netflix. It's, yeah. But I did start more in the kind of like indie films here, indie film circuit. And
what a great niche.
Yeah. I mean, and also we're fortunate enough here in Quebec to get a lot of support from grants, you know, for film projects and music too. And so, yeah, for me, word of mouth and a few key people getting an agent or like, you know, these things, it's not like I looked for an agent. I just happened to meet someone who was a Power Up First show in Toronto. And yeah, connections again. It's like, yeah, go meet people, get your music out there. Be nice.
Dude, be not, you know what, man, I have this thing I'm putting together for my kids, and it's just like life lessons. Just, I want to give it to them, you know, nothing like, not like a book, just like, you know, 10 bullet points with some explanations. And like the thing I said, the most important thing is just be nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
For yourself, it's the most important thing, let alone for getting along with others, man. Because if you're nice, like your life
be kind.
Just, like, yeah.
Yeah. Not be nice and like say yes to everything, but like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Be kind. Just like, it's so, your life is so much less stressful. Like for you, not for the other person. Be kind for you, you know, because your life is so much easier when you're not an asshole. I have found that because I've been an asshole and I've been kind, and I find it's much easier being kind.
Very kind, Craig.
Well, thanks. Talk about rejection for a minute. When you pitch something, and I know you're not pitching as much now, but when you early on, you'd pitch something, and if it would get rejected, did that bother you, or did you just look at it as a part of the business and like more like, okay, it's numbers. I'm going to put X amount of pitches up there. Statistically, Y percentage of them are going to get, you know, rejected. So I guess related to that, my question is really like, how did you handle, or how do you handle rejection in situations like that?
Yeah, this is, yeah, I love this question.
And, oh, cool.
Yeah, there's so much I want to talk about.
Awesome.
Regarding rejection and pitches too. And yeah, so rejection, I mean, it's so important. It's so important in your, you know, in growing and making your craft better. Yeah. You know, it's like mistakes. You have to, but the thing is, well, the good news is that actually, to go back, they're not mistakes. They're rejections. They're other people thinking it's not going to work this time, but it might work for something else. You know, it's just, it's not a big deal. A lot of the stuff in the early stages that for me were rejected, I don't know, some cue for like, that was meant for an advertisement or maybe even to get a gig scoring a film. Years later, because I thought it was a good idea and it just didn't work for that project, for those images.
Right.
And, but it was very useful years later for a TV show and all of a sudden became the theme of that show. So
that's awesome.
First of all, you should never think it's, you know, you don't delete it. It's never something that isn't going to be useful. You gotta think of it as something you made. If, you know, you it's always, it can always be useful is what I'm trying to say. And, but you, at the same time, you can learn like, oh, what is it that for them, you know, didn't work in that I could have done differently? And so, of course, you learn so much from thinking about that stuff. And I would add, so when talking about pitching, I don't really pitch so much anymore for anything. I don't know if I it's something that I don't quite believe in so much anymore. I know you have to do it sometimes. But just to take example of something that happened to me recently, Of course, I'm not going to put any names or, you know, but
you can.
I was asked to pitch to get, because, you know, they sometimes, or a lot of times, producers, there are producers and directors, they have this new project, and then they get this money from whoever, you know, Netflix, Amazon, whatever. And it's a new show, you know, it's like, there's so much in it, there's so much at stake. They're so nervous about everything, and like, okay, we need a composer, but oh, we have that amount for a budget. That's not so much. Okay, we're gonna look at a few people, and then they want everybody to pitch at some point. And but every the directors in that case, it was two people, and had a Zoom chat with them. I thought the Zoom chat went great. You know, they came in, they were from LA. So it's like, you know, kind of like, they're in a different world. They have a different pace. They're like, yeah, this and that. It's going to be this. So yeah. And so, but it's all good. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, sending them some of my music, and they listen to it, like it. They want to hear it, or they want to hear what you could do on two specific scenes. And then, so, you know, we want you to know that we're talking to a few composers, and this is the first season of the show for us. And they're asking us,
they want free samples, basically.
Well, yeah, and they're like, you know, everybody's doing it. Every composer is pitching in, and can you do this? You know, this is, I don't know, Wednesday, and we need this by Saturday.
Dude, this is not Costco. Do they know that?
Yeah, well,
yeah, so, I'm walking around the aisle grabbing egg rolls or something.
So my thing with pitching is that I don't feel it's a win-win situation, because I'm going to be, you know, doing something real fast for you. And what is it going to do? Like, this is not how it works. Like, well, I mean, not most of the time, a lot of time, that's how they want it to work. And I kind of understand it too, but I personally have decided not to do it, because I'm not going to go insane for like 2 days and to do something that's not going to be good enough for me and not good enough for you. I'd rather, for me, it's like, we have a good chat. We talk about the project more, the characters, the story, and what we can do with sound to accompany this. And like, I can send you so much music for you to get an idea of the range of what we can do here. And then it's just a matter of trust. And like, if we're going to do this, then let's do it. Yeah. You know, and then once we're working on the project, we'll work together to get, you know, what you want.
I have so much respect for you.
You know what I mean? And
yeah,
Craig, the trust that I'm talking about here is not just one way. That's the thing about pitching.
And you know what? And you know what? This is what 15 years of doing this allows you to say, and how it gives you the right to think. No, seriously. It's like, hey, man, I got to trust you guys as much as, you know, you got to trust me. This is like a, you know, I, cause you're going to spend literally 15, 16 hours a day for 2 days creating something. You really don't know what they want. You haven't had time to explore anything. And it's almost like closing your eyes and throwing a dart at the dartboard.
Yeah.
How are you going to hit that?
And a bunch of other composers are doing the same thing. And I feel uncomfortable being put in the position of like, because I'm not in it. Like, I don't like competition. I'm not a very competitive person, and I don't like to think of music as something that I need to do in an athletic form.
Right.
And the thing is, and it happened a few times before too, that like a director on the film would say, oh, well, it's very important. Like, you know, it's my first feature film. So I'm asking a few composers to pitch, you know, to make sure and everything. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It, like, I don't know if your movie is going to be good. You're not pitching.
You know, where's the pitch to you?
Yeah. And not to, I don't want to be pretentious or anything, but like, I'll have to attach my name to that project as well. And there's nothing that guarantees me. I think that's where it's a fair deal. You know, it's like, if we're going to do this, let's talk about the creative stuff. And like, and also if we get along well, if the communication is well, then I don't see why it wouldn't work, because, you know, you've heard the music, I've sent you stuff, there's enough there. I think if you're calling me back, it's because there's enough there for you to think and hope that we can do something cool. So that's my whole approach, my vision about pitching and stuff like that. Of course, for me, if it was some huge project from like a crazy dream, you know, I've always wanted to score like a thriller or like a horror, like a dark on a film. If an opportunity like that would present itself and I would need to pitch for it, I would probably think twice. But yeah, pitching, man, it's like, yeah, at this point I would rather, like, I ended up not getting the gig, of course, because all the other composers
they were willing to play the game.
Yeah. And it was fine. And again, like, going back to the question about rejection too, in my personal experiences, like, all the gigs I ended up not getting, I just felt, and I could see weeks later or years later or whatever, that it wasn't meant for me. You know, I wasn't meant to work on that project, and it's fine. And the project, sometimes they didn't go to the end of it, and sometimes it did, and it became something else, or like something that's fine the way it is, but that's different and not something I was meant for.
Man, thank you. That was such a cool answer. I mean, I have a couple of comments, you know, on things that you said. You know, the reality is you don't learn when you succeed. You know, tuition costs extra, man. So the times that you fail, that's when you learn, because you got to go back to the drawing board and like, okay, what happened here? And you alluded to that, and I agree with it tremendously. The other thing you talked about is fair. You said something like, you know, well, what about you? You know, I had a guy on, I don't know if you know, ever heard of Jeff Rona. He's a pretty successful composer in LA. And he made a comment one time. He said, Craig, you can't score good music over bad film. And, you know, that's a big, important point, because to me, when I'm doing something with business in any capacity, I want it to be fair. And fair means fair for that guy and fair for me. Fair is a two-way street. It doesn't mean, you know, one of us walks away holding the other guy by the balls. That's not fair. I don't want to be a part of that transaction on either side. Yeah. You know?
And that's so true in film projects too. It's like, a lot of times, I've seen it so many times, when the musician, the composer, a lot of time will come in kind of at the end of the chain, like at the end of the process, and is expected to save a lot of problems solve a lot of problems in the film, just with the music stuff that they can't, like they've tried everything, but it's like, it was shot. It's in the can. It's edited. It's still not doing the effect that they're looking for. So like the music is kind of like the last resort, you know?
Right. You need to save it.
Yeah. And they're expecting you like to change everything with the music, which is not always false. Like you can, I believe you can still kind of do that, but it's, I mean, like you said, if there are problems there with that scene, there's only so much you can do with the music too. And it's like, that's on them.
You know, yeah, man, you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit. That's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing I liked what you said was that you want me to, this was what I really, the comes down to. You want me to pitch, but I don't know anything about your movie. You got a bunch of funding. Great. But I got to attach my name to this. And, you know, how do you, you know, when you choose a new dentist, like, do you go in there and say, hey, listen, man, can you give me some free samples of your dental work? That's just not how it works. You know, you know, when you go to a lawyer, hey man, I'd like to just review some of your typical legal documents before we start work. It tell you to go to hell. You know, do that with a New York lawyer. See how long your meeting lasts, right? You have to make a decision based on however you make decisions, gut feel, referral, which they had referral to you. They have all your music. Like, you know, there's a burden on the decision maker at a certain point in time to like just make a decision of trust and then work together. Like, and that's what music is about anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And then once you start working on the project, then of course you start sending stuff. It's, you know, and you send each other references and this and that. And then you build, you know, the sort of, how do you call it, the color pad, or like the, you know, the whole, what yeah. you're going to be working with for to get the signature color to colors to that movie or that project or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would much rather work with a guy that says to me, hey, listen, man, the way I work is on trust. If you're confident and I could do the job, then you need to trust me, just like I need to trust that. Because that guy that's or gal that says that to me is like, okay, this person is going to like work their ass off because they're predicated on trust. And that is not something that you can build without hard work. You got to, you know, mutually. And that's the person I want in my corner. That's the guy I want on my team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good that you said that, man. Of course, look, 15 years into it, maybe you would have had a different decision 14 years ago. But either way, at this point in time, yeah, I think that's great. That's a great story, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Every time I talk to you, I get more stories. This is so cool. Thanks. This is great, man. Can you do me a favor? Tilt your camera down just a little bit, because sometimes your face gets cut off. Yeah, well, I don't know where your face gets. Yeah, thanks.
Hold on a sec.
Yeah, man.
If I do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect. Yeah, man. Thank you. You got a standing desk.
I do, yeah.
Look at that.
I'm not standing right now.
I was looking at, I just bought a new desk yesterday. I was looking at, I'm like, oh, the standing desk sounds really cool. And I thought, I'm not going to stand. Who am I kidding? I go out and walk like 3-4 miles, but I'm not going to stand. You're involved in composing for film and TV. Knowing what you know today, is there a different avenue of licensing that you might have pursued if you had to do it all over again? Or are you in your right place?
I mean, no.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm doing a bit of everything. Well, you know, film, TV, documentaries, a little more. Like TV shows in the past few years. But yeah, no, I feel like it's a good place for me.
Is there anything in your licensing career you wish you did earlier?
It's a good one. I mean, in my life in general, I wish I had done most of like the things that I've done earlier. But I guess just like technical stuff, like learning certain softwares or hardware, stuff like that. But at the same time, it's like, whatever, like, you know, I've learned it kind of on the spot and like I've done mistakes using stuff. And like, also, even these mistakes actually created some opportunities for me, because at some point, you know, I was making a music that was perhaps a little on the lo-fi end, but that had a sound or a texture that was a little more lo-fi, but that was exactly what certain directors were looking for, because they didn't want something that was so hi-fi and orchestrated and this and that, you know?
That's really
cool. It worked really well for me at the beginning, and for them, it might have appeared like something that I was going for, you know.
That's so cool when like something kind of accidental or like,
yeah,
you know, it turns out to be like a blessing in disguise. That's really cool when that happens. Yeah.
And then later on, I kind of like, okay, learn more about mixing and this and that. And things started sounding better. And so I had the option to do that too, because you can always go back to lo-fi and making things sound a little dirtier, but it's good to also have the option to do something good in hi-fi if needed.
Very cool. Tell me something. Oh no, let me ask, which of your personality traits do you feel have contributed to your success in licensing?
Ooh. I mean, maybe my ability to remain calm.
That's huge.
Yeah. You know, even if sometimes inside it isn't, but I'm able to like just kind of like keep it in and make it look like I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
That, and also the ego thing, you know, when I go on a project, like, I really, it's a collaboration, and I'm not going to be, there's not going to be any ego. And if they're going to say something like, oh, well, this sounds happy and they're minor chords, then I'm not going to fight it and go crazy, you know?
Yeah. And explain it to them. Right. Right. No, you're wrong. Yeah. That's probably not a good thing to
do. None of that. I think I learned that too through making more of TV projects, because of the deadlines and the time factor and having to deliver quickly. It's like you have no time to argue and this and that. If, you know, if a director tells you one thing, like it's like that, you're not going to change his mind really.
Right.
Unless it happened for like something important, like the theme of a show or something, where like, well, it wasn't so much that I was arguing with the director, but it was more like we believed in this one version, but not the producers. And that's the one time I told the director, like, oh, that's the one. You feel it too. I feel it. Like, this is it. Sometimes the producers are just like, I don't know. I don't want to be too harsh. It can be one person in an office, you know, and then listening to the track and saying things. I'm like, whoa, those comments, like, what's the context? Because you're trying to push new ideas too, you know, and you're trying to come up with stuff. And anyways, for personally here, sometimes I have to fight for certain ideas to like go through, but more with the producers, tell them, no, that's that's the shit. That's cool. That's kind of like, if you want to like show something that's a little different, like, kind of like, you know, go for it. Like,
but did they come back and thank you after that?
Oh.
Or at least acknowledge, hey, man, I'm glad we went with that.
Yeah.
They did. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, I mean, it won't be like the producers personally getting in touch with me. It'll be more through the director or whatever. But yeah, it happens sometimes.
What's the best music licensing advice you've ever been given, and who gave it to you?
Never had any.
Really?
Said anything. No, I can't. Can't think of anything right now.
So you've really done this all bootstrapped by yourself, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I have a good friend. Or like, I can think of two people who are making music and are also in, you know, who are also making music for films, and both composers. One of them stopped a few years ago, but there are people that I call for, like, I consider them like professionals. You know, they've been doing it for many years, and they do it like, they have like really professional setups and everything. Like I think of myself in that world as, it's really more the music and the composing part that I feel I'm really comfortable with, and more technical and the recording and this and that. Like, I've decided not to worry too much about it. I'm still learning. That triggers a little. I can go back to the previous question with this. One thing that a producer said, a music producer, the Alchemist, a hip hop producer that I love, said, and that really, you know, gave me a lot of confidence to keep doing this. But he said, you know, when he was talking about what he was using, his tools, you know, he's using an MPC sampler, a turntable. Like, he's been using the same stuff for a long time, and they're probably considered like older pieces of gear, you know? But he said, it doesn't matter what you use, there are tools, whatever you're using, just make it sing.
Yeah.
And this really resonated. And that's what I'm trying to do, using what I have. And trying to do the best with what I have, what I'm using. And also, it means like, oh, sometimes I'll try something new, try it because, you know, I hear it's doing wonders or whatever. But then I tend to go back to what I feel comfortable with, and what I feel I can make, you know, the best out of. So
I think that's important. People so get caught up in like gear, and just like, it's like analysis paralysis. You know, people will spend, I used to belong to some, you know, podcasting forums, and I'd see the people posting there, and I'm like, and they'd spend months evaluating equipment. Like, just start your damn show, get some piece of shit mic, and like, you may have no audience, so it doesn't really matter, or you may do great. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
get moving.
Yeah, I had a point where I kind of got lost in that. And yeah, limitation always triggers creativity, because you have no choice. You have to figure out how you're going to do this. And so I always kind of go back to that. And it feels so nice to be able to go back to that thought, you know. It's really, that gives me a lot of hope that to continue to do that. And you can always find a way because it's for me, it's more about, again, the textures, the how you're telling the story and the feel and all that. So that isn't so much a matter of equipment and
yeah,
and technology totally, and all that.
All right, so two more quick questions. At the end of our first interview, I asked you if you had any final words of wisdom, and you said, stay curious and stay open. This solves a lot of problems. I really like that answer, and I'd love you to just elaborate on that again.
Oh, yeah. I think it's just that if you're curious enough, you'll look for the next thing. You will want to find out. If you're not curious, you'll just stop there, and it's a door that's closed already. But if you're curious enough, then you're opening lots of doors, and it'll lead you somewhere. And well, depending on the context, you know, it's I think the best way to start to try to get to an understanding of something, you know, and not be judgmental. Also, you know,
I agree with you. Curious. Yeah, I think curiosity is such an important trait for any kind of success in any realm.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. And any advice to newbies looking to get into music licensing?
I think it's important to know why you want to do it, and to know what drives you. Yeah, if you know why you're doing it, then I think you'll know how to do it, and you'll know how you want to do it. I'd say, well, kind of like the Alchemist said too, you know, it's not so much about the tools and all that. It's just like, if you're going to do it, make it sing. It's
make it sing.
Make it sing, and find your own colors, and try to, yeah, it's good to be, try to push it and try new ideas and try to be original, and, you know, so I would say that, and be curious.
Be curious, for sure, man.
Yeah.
Dude, let me tell people where to find you. Thanks so much. I love talking to you. You're always got some Thank interesting you. Stuff to I say, like man. Okay, so check out, I'm going to give you a couple of websites. First of all, if you want to get any information on Say's music licensing career and background, go to his website. It's snp-ost.com. So it stands for his name, Say Nicauchi Pelletier, SNP-OST. I dare ask what OST stands for. What is that?
Oh, original soundtracks.
Oh, man, how easy is that? Yeah, SNP-OST. Dude, that makes total sense. OriginalSoundtracks.com. Yeah, he's got a really... Yeah.
SNP-OST.com. I mean, it is what it is, but you can find a lot of music there. Just some of the projects I worked on and some links to the bands.
Yeah, and you got a ton of projects, a ton of movies in the back. It's a really nice site. I really liked it. I know it's a new project for yours. You did a really good job on it. Yes, and also, what's Teke Teke's website?
It is teketekeband.com. So TEKETEKEBAND.com.
Great. And I would really encourage you to check out Teke Teke's music. I mean, this is so cool. This stuff is so cool. I hadn't heard of the band, and I think your PR person might have pitched it to me, and I listened to it, and I emailed him back like the same day. I'm like, yeah, man, I want to this. I was just like, yeah, immediately. That's really good. And check out the band's recent album, Hagata, H-A-G-A-T-A, which is really good. And they have a brand new single out. They did a cover of The Clash's Bank Robber for charity to support an organization called rescue.org. So that's out on social media. And where do you post touring? Is it on the Teke Teke band website?
Pretty much everything is on the band's website.
Okay, cool.
But on our Instagram, follow us, check it out.
Definitely follow the band on all the socials. Man, I appreciate your time, so thank you so much. Hang on one second. Any final words of wisdom? Any final comments?
Man, let's say hang in there, everybody. Yeah, I think the same way I finished last time, I said, I think I just said I wanted to promote peace and kindness.
You did, so peace and kindness. Yeah, man, good memory. That's exact. That was good. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, share it out on your socials. We appreciate your support. If you're interested in discovering how to get your music licensed and placed in TV and movies, video games, and streaming services, check out our new training video at musicreboot.com. Thanks very much to Say Nakauchi Pelletier for spending time with us. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice and have fun. Until next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. Say, thank you so much as always, brother.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.